Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight, episode 115, and we are going to be chatting about knowledge versus gear. And I don't want to say that's a vague title, because to me, I think it's a very specific title. But let's, like we always do, what does that mean to you, Ben?
Well, it goes back to the old saying, and I think we've talked about this a little bit before, is the more you know, the less you take. And we don't necessarily agree with that statement, but the question we're kind of asking is it more important to have the knowledge or the gear? If you had to choose one or the other, you're going to go in the woods and try and survive. Would you rather have all the gear, or would you rather have all the knowledge without the gear? What would be serve you better? And I think that answer is going to vary based on the individual. And I know, because we're taking out the knowledge, we're assuming that if you have all the gear, you don't necessarily have knowledge, but there's different things that'll feed into that. And that's where I think we're going to end up. But like all our best episodes, as you said earlier, we don't plan these things out very well. So we don't know where we're going to end up.
No, and I, like I was joking with Ben before we started this, and I wasn't really joking. I was joking, but kind of serious at the same time. It has been commented that some of the best responses we get on our podcasts are the fact that we don't really rehearse them, that it does create a little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? Variety. We don't have a pre-planned conception coming into this going, oh yeah, we're going to agree on that. And that's how we're going to lay this out, which don't get me wrong. That works. It makes for a great structured episode of sorts. If anybody has stayed with us this long, you realize we don't necessarily follow structure, but we tend to get a lot of good points out. And the fact that Ben and I, like at best, we briefly discuss some of these things, it makes our opinions very raw. To the fact that if Ben says something, I may not necessarily agree with it, but I mean, we're both big enough people that even if we don't agree, we still mutually respect the opinion. And I think that's kind of what this whole episode's going to be about. I don't know what similarities we're going to have. I don't know what differences we're going to have, which kind of makes for an interesting episode.
Very much so. I think people would be really surprised if they know how little we talk about these things beforehand. And oftentimes, I think I can say this without exaggerating the least. Some days, Monday or Wednesday, midday, I get a text. What are we talking about
today? What do you mean, some days? That's most days. About noon, while I'm sitting there eating my lunch at work, the old text comes out. So what do you want to talk about tonight, Ben? And I mean, that's basically the end of our discussion. It's just, we come up with an idea that sounds good. We'll bounce some ideas off each other and, well, hey, that sounds like a good one. And this one's actually been on the docket for a couple weeks now. It just kept getting pushed, unfortunately, and I kept wanting to come back to it. So, and this was actually one of your original ideas, Ben. Like I said, it was definitely a good idea. Last week, it got bumped for another one. And anyway, I definitely want to come back to it because it's a great topic. And I do see some folks in the comments. We got some of our regulars there. We got Steve. We got Duncan. And I'd rather be outside. So, welcome, gentlemen. And, so let's... Short little ramble there. Once again, if you notice, that happens. I guess the only thing I wanted to add on to your explanation there was one thing I do want to add into the discussion is at a certain point, knowledge and gear cross. Not only, like, sometimes you're going to be limited in what you can do with your knowledge if you don't have the gear to back it up, and sometimes you're going to be limited on what you can do with the gear if you don't have the knowledge and how to use it. And I think it's going to be too much to discuss every circumstance that happens, but maybe if we can at least briefly discuss how to be aware of when you're coming up on that transition.
Yeah, I agree that if you were to graph the two out, there's definitely a crossing point, and I think it probably is close to the center of your experience, but you know, that's kind of a subjective thing at best.
But yeah, and that's why I don't want to, you know, try and get too many specifics in there, because I think that would end up for a very long, probably interesting discussion, but might be more than what we get into on our regular podcast here. Now, I just happened to see something that Duncan said on the side here, and he said he spent 39 days in Wentworth with no gear. Had knife, flip-flop, shorts, t-shirt. It was awesome. Knowledge over gear will always be the greater half. And, I mean, unless you had more to say, that's a great segue into starting this off, if you want to go down that road, Ben.
Well, I tend to agree. If you have the knowledge, needing the gear isn't going to be as important, because really with very little gear, you can make everything you're going to need. And that in itself is an awesome skill, and it grows you as a person. The thing is, few of us start at that point. I mean, there's very few people that start off with all the knowledge. In fact, I can't imagine anyone can say they do, because that's not how we work as humans, as people. And most of us, some of us start this life younger than others, but most of us have to start at some point. And generally at that point, resources are low, knowledge is low. So you start off by trying to find a few pieces of gear to get you the minimum and get out there. And that's where you start learning. And then I think for most people, as you start to build the appreciation and interest, that's where the gear kind of peaks up. You start gathering this stuff more and more. People find out you're interested in it. Somebody gives you something, you find stuff on sale, you come up with a few extra bucks, you buy stuff you want, and you gain all this gear. And it's because you have the gear, you end up going out and using it. And this is where you start to get your knowledge.
Now, see, I don't disagree with what you say. I guess adding on to that is, like you said, as you develop the knowledge, the gear generally comes afterwards. Knowledge is cheap. Generally, you don't pay for a lot of it unless you take a course or something like that, which I totally support. Don't get me wrong. If you want to acquire a whole bunch of specific knowledge really quickly, courses, tag-alongs, things like that, best way to do it. But if you're soloing this and developing your own skill set, your own knowledge set, generally that comes over time. At low cost. Either you're YouTubing it, you're listening to guys like us, you're listening to gals like some other YouTubers there. I guess I don't really want to throw out any specific names, just in case. But anyway, I'm sure you could go out there and you find 100 different YouTubers that are going to give you tons of information and skills, and we fully support them. And that's a great way to learn. Same as reading books, just, you know, Googling stuff, looking at websites, web forms. You acquire this knowledge over time, and then you slowly put it into practicality. At a certain point, and this is kind of like I said at the first, your knowledge is going to start overcoming the gear you have. And a prime example was hammocks, which was the example I had up in my head. I started off with, you know, a cheaper Coleman hammock. And I loved it at first because I didn't know enough to not know what I didn't know, if that makes any kind of sense. If anybody can follow along that train of thought, but I mean, it was a hammock. It worked. I still have it. It still works. It's a good hammock. I'm not saying anything bad about it, but as my knowledge about hammocks increased and I started chatting with Ben and chatting with other people and things like that, I realized there was things I wanted in a hammock that the one I currently had couldn't fulfill. I wanted a little wider hammock. I wanted whoopee slings on my hammock. I wanted a hammock with a bug net. I wanted a little lighter, more packable hammock. Like, these are all things that I learned as I went that I was like, oh, this would be nice. I knew it was out there right from the start. But originally, I was just like, I don't know why I would need these things. Why would I spend the $80, $90, $100, $150, $200 plus dollars on a hammock when I can get a hammock that strings up between two trees for $50? And literally, that was my thought process. And I thought about this after our little discussion at lunch. And I thought it was a prime example of how a lot of things can go in the bushcrafting world. Would you agree with that, Ben, or am I kind of going off on my own tangent here?
No, I agree. While you were going on, I was kind of thinking of something. You said knowledge is cheap, and that's an interesting topic in itself. But it is, because you can pick up knowledge anywhere. You can pick it up free on YouTube, like you said. You can pick it up from all these things. I wanted to sort of correct you, and then I got thinking about it. It's not that knowledge is cheap. Experience is expensive. And if you can gain that knowledge without using the experience, like if you pay somebody a few hundred dollars to take you and teach you a whole bunch of things, that really is, I mean, and this is a huge debate, I guess, in itself, that's probably a lot cheaper than spending a ton of money on equipment, getting out and testing it and learning that through hard-won experience. Because we've both done that. And honestly, our bank accounts would show it.
Oh, for sure. Right. If you were to put everything I have, and don't get me wrong, when it comes to gear, I think you got me beat, hands down, Ben, when it comes just to knowledge of gear. I know what I have, and I know how to use it, and I know very primitive things. But when it comes to actual gear, I still rely on Ben quite a bit. Like, would you not agree I ask you a ton of questions about crap I don't know about? Like today, I was hounding you about boats because I want a boat, but I don't know a bunch about boats. So I ask questions. And I completely lost my train of thought. So anyway, moving on.
But no, like, to go and buy 7 or 8 canoes to figure out which one the best one is. And then
Nope, go ahead.
That would be expensive. That is very expensive. And the problem versus the stuff you can learn on YouTube and experience yourself is it might be true for the guy telling you this. We can tell everyone that hammocks are the best way to do camping. And for us, it's true. But for I'd rather be outside, that might be a complete lie.
And he happens to be in here, so I'm sure he'll weigh in on that.
I know the truth of this one.
And that's the other thing is sometimes gear is subjective to personal opinion. You know what I mean? And that's where your knowledge is going to outweigh the gear itself. You may know this is the best hammock that's ever been made for whatever reason, but if you don't like hammocks and hammocks aren't your thing, is it really any good to you? You know it can work, but do you like it? So now your knowledge, like, oh, I like sleeping in a tent or a natural shelter or whatever. I like sleeping on the ground or, you know, whatever your thing happens to be. That is my preference. So your knowledge is going and skill set is going to tend to lean in that direction, right?
Trying to fix my lighting here a little bit.
Yeah, no worries. I was just kind of, I caught the comments there and I'd rather be outside as agreeing with you wholeheartedly.
Right. So, yeah. So I'm just trying to think my own thought process there for a second. Yeah. So we have knowledge versus gear. And this is what we want to talk about. Let's get back to the core subject.
Yeah. And
we're going to go off topic again now in a second. I know. So the goal here is how do you get to the point of getting that knowledge? And that's through experience and opportunities to get out and learn and through YouTube and all that. But does it really mean you're going to take less gear?
No,
it means you can.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you will.
And I mean, I'm kind of prime example of that.
You said before, you love your comforts, right?
Yeah, I say I love my creature comforts, but I'm more realistically, I'm a creature of comfort. I enjoy the things that make it more comforting to me, you know what I mean? Yeah, I can sleep on the ground with nothing but a wool blanket, but why would I?
Yeah. So part of the knowledge is what makes you comfortable and what you can experience. But what I think really does change...
Steve's picking at me, that's all. If anybody so the comment I'm laughing about here, Steve made, some people eat nuts and oats while others prefer bacon and eggs. And I'm not going to get into that story because we've mentioned it before. Good opportunity to go back and listen to previous podcasts and you'll know what that means.
Yes, you will. Darn it. Okay.
Yeah, I derailed you. Sorry.
Totally. Just like totally. Out. So what I had asked was like, does it mean you'll take less gear? And I think what will change isn't necessarily less gear or less weight, but more specific gear. You're going to take the gear that you would plan on using, that you know you're going to want, the gear that's going to give you the best experience, that's going to enable you to complete your goals and tasks to the best of your ability. I think that's the big change, right? So when me and you plan things now, we plan them totally different than we would have 5, 10, 15 years ago.
No, I agree. If you're wondering why I went silent here, I'm trying a new thing. Anytime I see a comment or a question that comes up that I want to bring into the video, I'm now trying to pin it. So if anybody sees that going on, that's me trying something new so I can not lose these comments and hopefully not break us up like I just did.
So years ago, we would go in and we would have the what ifs. And I think that is the real change with the knowledge and gear is when you have the what ifs, you have 1,000 things that could go wrong. So you bring 1,000 pieces of equipment for each of these potential what ifs. As you get out and get knowledge and experience, you start to realize that some of these what ifs are pretty well never wells.
Or you learn that, excuse me, even if it did happen, you can kind of manage by thinning the herd out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So now, though, now you've opened up this new spot. And I have a habit of when I have a new spot in my pack, it must be filled. Right? There's a hole that can carry something. But now I can fill it with fun things or new things that I want to try and learn on and play with.
And that's kind of into the skills and knowledge developing side of things. You know what I mean? Once you gain knowledge, it's almost like a snowball effect. You start finding more efficient ways of gaining knowledge.
Exactly. Now, I mean, there's no doubt knowledge is better than equipment, but here's the real question is, can equipment make up for, can gadgets and better gear be better than knowledge? If you had unlimited resources versus unlimited knowledge, do you think you'd be equal?
So I think to a degree, yes, but there's always a tipping point. And the prime example that I always think of and bring reference to is GPS versus compass. You know what I mean? A lot of people say, as long as I get a GPS, things are good. And in a perfect world, yeah. As long as you get a GPS and you have a basic understanding of how to use it, things are good. You don't really need that compass and map. But there's a lot of factors that can go into that where that may no longer work. Simple things like maybe you forgot to install the map set. Your batteries died. You get into an area where the GPS just doesn't work that good, which sometimes it's as easy as you get in a little dip or a valley or something like that, and it cuts out, and it only takes you a little while to get turned around. Like there's factors that can go in that, you know, good old fashioned knowledge of map and compass isn't going to replace. And I think at a certain point for most gear, you're going to find that there's a trade-off like that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's going to offer a lot of good benefits, but at a certain point, you still need a little bit of knowledge to back that up.
Yeah, and I think even with that example, I mean, I could, being the devil's advocate, say that a compass can fail, that you could end up in an area, say, with high iron content where the compass will act incorrectly or wrong and could skew you off, but it takes more skill to operate a compass properly than it does a GPS. As in, I can take someone in a couple hours, show them how to use a GPS, and pretty well consistently they will be able to do it. With the same couple of hours, I can't guarantee they're going to be as good with the compass. But if they use the compass and they learn it, they learn a lot more skills. Here's the thing. When a guy goes in with a compass and it fails, and a guy goes in with a GPS and it fails, I would believe that the guy with the compass skills, even without a compass, has a better chance of using the skills he learned to get himself out.
And I would agree. And just to kind of continue on to your point, there was the individual that knows how to build a primitive compass, perhaps out of staking and shadowing or knowing the cardinal directions by whatever, North Star, however you want to go about it, or just knowing the lay of the land, is going to stand a better chance again. And in which case is just more knowledge, but no additional gear going in.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. With the GPS user, for example, and we're going to continue a little bit with this, he's going to always be looking at a screen and expecting an arrow to point him in the right direction. And when he goes off, it'll quickly correct him. So it's a constant thing. With the compass guy, he's shooting a sight from a long distance away. So even if the compass breaks, he's still going to know to look at something in the distance and keep walking towards it. And he's going to keep going in the right direction. Once he loses his compass, he can still sight a thing and run a relatively straight line, even without the compass. And the reality is, you walk along in a straight line, you're going to hit one of three or four things: a road, a power line, a river, or some other water feature. And at this point, you've reached where it's most likely going to get you to safety.
And that's just it. Once again, even basic skills of orienteering, if I said that right, is going to outweigh it, because like you said, you have the basic knowledge to pick a site far off and continue traveling at that and lining yourself up and continuing to go in a straight line if you don't have that compass, versus the person that has the GPS and they have their face buried in the screen. I'm going to say a very broad blanket statement here, and I kind of like your opinion on this because I know it's going to be a controversial statement, is the more advanced your gear, generally the more dependent people become on it. So if you have that GPS, you tend to learn on the GPS and your skills get rusty for anything else. If you have that real advanced tenting system, you may lack some of the other stuff that you should be keeping into, like the proper place to put a shelter, drainage, you know, wind directions, things like that. And if something goes wrong with the sophistication of that piece of gear, you're kind of left flapping in the wind.
Well, in that case, literally, yes. Pun intended, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it works with a ton of skills. Fire lighting. If you're used to lighting a fire with a blowtorch, then you're not taking the time and skill it takes to properly prepare a fire. If you're used to lighting it, if you challenge yourself with like the one match challenge, or you know, the fire and steel, or if you actually use an actual flint and steel, or friction, when you take that effort and when you have that basic skill, usually everything else you go to it, you know, increases in difficulty, so that you prep better and you make sure that you know all the proper steps. That dovetails perfectly with your tent example. If you have a high-tech, powerful tent with, you know, that can handle hurricane force winds and torrential rains, then, and you can set it up on any surface, then all of a sudden you're not thinking about what's the best surface to set up on, how to avoid the wind, how to avoid the rain, how to best set it up for everything else. Where the guy who's used to doing a tarp or a lean-to type shelter, he takes all that into account because he knows he's only got one chance and it takes hours to set this up. He wants the best advantage. So he's thinking about all these things. Now, a lot of guys that started out with that and then go to the higher end equipment, they have a new advantage, is they're still using this because they can't forget it. They won't forget it. Now their gear is going to last longer. It's going to work better because they're giving it all the natural advantages. So that knowledge combined with the equipment just gives you an infinitely better setup. If you can mix both of them, I think your problems are much less. It's how you get there, right?
And I completely agree with that. Now, to play devil's advocate on the other side of this, do you think you can take this too far in the other direction? You develop your skills and rely on the basics of stuff so much, you deprive yourself of some luxuries and niceties that you could potentially be getting through more advanced gear.
Oh, I think so. I think so, because if you decide that I'm now only going to do the absolute most primitive thing, you're going to go into woods with just the knife. And I mean, and there's a level of joy and excitement and reward in doing this. It does potentially mean that you're now working a little bit harder than you need to on every trip. But so if you always did this, then, you know, me and you have both said this in past episodes, building a proper lean-to does not happen in 15 minutes.
No.
Right? Or at least for us. Maybe there's somebody out there who's just like, whoop, whoop, done. I can't.
Tarp over a rope, bud. Tarp over a rope.
What?
A tarp over a rope. But now we're into, you know, we're relying on.
I'm talking of a true primitive one. So we're going to lay, you know, cut some sticks, lay them in the right shape, and then layer it with evergreens and birch bark or whatever we can get, and cover it in moss and build like a proper lean-to shelter, like primitive shelter. Those take time. A debris shelter takes some time. You don't have the tools like rakes to gather up the materials, and you're doing that all by your hands. Again, it's going to take time. If you decide not to take any of these high-tech quick equipments, then you have to plan on the extra time each task is going to take, because you don't have these niceties, these advantages. So You know, if you have to make your cookware, if you have to make your eating utensils, you have to make all your fire from the most basic of elements in your shelter and all that, then this takes a lot of time. Where is this time coming from? If you're traveling distance, it means less time to travel. So now, although you're lighter and can move faster when you're moving, you are going to cut into the time you have. Finding that balance of the right gear to complement your experience and knowledge to give you the best to get what you want, that is the true dialing of it in, I think. That is where you get that true balance. What gear is it worth spending the money and time on, and what gear do you not need because you can easily and quickly deal without it?
And there's kind of a third side to this coin, triangle, I guess, at this point, is the primitive skills are good and the basic knowledge is great, but sometimes the more advanced gear also saves you a lot more risk. You mentioned, you know, making your own cook sets or your own eating utensils or the lean-to or any of that. Not only are you putting time into that, you're adding additional risk into that. If you have nothing but a knife and you're trying to make a lean-to, I assume you're going to be batoning it or you're going to be looking for natural cordage. Like, you're going to be doing these increased risk activities that some basic gear can get you out of. So like you said, there's a fine balance in there, and knowing what you can do versus what you need to do is kind of a thing you kind of have to take a step back and really recognize about yourself. Don't 100% rely on the gear to do the work for you, but at the same time, if you don't need to 100% rely on yourself and your knowledge, sometimes that gear, as we kind of, you know, coming full circle here, makes things a lot more enjoyable and frees up that time and takes a lot of risk out of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a world of risk that I can see as you bring this up. Like, if you're going in with minimum gear, what happens if that gear fails? Have you put yourself in an undue risk? Because you depended on that one or two pieces of gear to get you both in and out. Now that gear has failed. How do I replace that essential key piece? That and the piece I'll concentrate on this is your knife. So you go in the woods with your knife and it breaks. Now you don't have a sharp object, like, you know, and you can say, well, I can make a knife in the woods. I'll make a stone knife, or I'll make it. I don't know where you live or in general, but I mean, I know where you actually live, but where our listeners all live. But here in Nova Scotia, finding a decent piece of chert or flint or even a usable quartz is
next to impossible.
Is a difficult task.
You're going to have far better chance finding an old glass bottle and hoping to whittle something out of that if you're good at flint napping, which is a skill all on its own, which brings more inherent risks.
It does. And it takes time and effort, and still it needs, there are tools to allow you to flint nap. Like, you know, you need the chipping tools, you need, you know, something to hold it and protect your hand. So a piece of leather or a piece of stout cloth and stuff. So if you've gone in with minimum gear without that plan in place, because I guarantee you the very first peoples that invented it, it took them generations and generations to fine tune these skills, because they didn't have the equipment to make this easy. They had to find and discover and then learn how to combine them correctly and use them. So, you know, we weren't as a species, as we weren't to this level of technology overnight. It took a long time. And as we gained more and more pieces, we exponentially got better and quicker. But that's because we had these skills to base everything else off of. And we could gain more and more equipment and tools with that.
No, I completely agree. And something I don't normally do is I'm going to reference another YouTuber, and I don't have their permission, so hopefully they don't, you know, ring us out to dry on this. But yeah, exactly. Primitive skills. He kind of set the... And funny enough, the only reason I was referencing this, because I knew we were going to be talking about this today, and I kind of went back and looked at some of this stuff, and it's argued and debatable. He might have set a new kind of YouTube genre in there of like the silent primitive skill set, where you just go in, you don't talk to the camera, you're just showing your skills and stuff like that. But the good thing about his stuff is you can literally chronologically look at like the tool ages he goes through as his videos progress on. And if anybody hasn't checked him out, be sure to check him out. It's great. He hasn't made any videos in the last year. But rumor has it, and I mean, this is only rumor, from a little bit of research and digging around, I think he's working on a TV show. So, what's that?
I could believe that.
I think that's, like I said, it's rumor. Don't take it as, you know, you heard it here, it must be true. But digging around on the Reddits and some other videos and stuff like that, it was mentioned that he had his own subreddit there, and it was mentioned that he's working on a network TV show. So anyway, if anybody's wondering where he disappeared to, potentially that's where it happened. But getting back to the point, start on his first video and just kind of go through them. One, they're an amazing series. Like, this guy, he's amazing out in the woods. Doesn't say a word, and he just starts from nothing. And at the end of it, he's got some pretty sophisticated tools, you know what I mean? But I can guarantee you that he didn't go in on a Friday afternoon and come out on a Monday morning and have all that done. You know what I mean? Like, there was weeks and months and stuff put into this. And you can kind of see, like, as he builds an axe and he uses the axe to make the next tool and makes the next tool to make the next tool and blah, and so on and so forth. There's a ton of time that goes into that.
Yeah. Each one of his videos must have taken weeks. And the skills that he developed for each one, and you can see it, there's a constant progression of his skills and his abilities throughout this, is pretty realistic of what would have probably taken hundreds of years for us as a species to do. Because he has the advantage that he can go home and research some of this, mm-hmm. and then he goes out and tries it. And, that is a huge advantage to be able to look and learn how other people have done this and succeeded. Because without that knowledge base, it's all trial and error. And there's a million possible ways to do things, but only a handful will truly work.
Exactly. And that's kind of dragging it back into the point of the episode that I want to make with this was, there's a prime case where that guy just has knowledge. You know what I mean? Because he obviously didn't take gear. He went in with a pair of old cargo shorts and nothing but knowledge and went in. And yeah, it works. Now, how does that relate to our episode here tonight? Yes, you can do it, as we just said. But if he had went in with a lot of niceties, like most of us, I don't want to call us weekend warriors, but generally we only have a few days to get out. You know what I mean? We're not living, eating, breathing this, although we do wish we could. We have wives, we have families. We only get a few days to sneak out, and this is where the gear kind of makes up for those shortcomings. Your gear is great to cut down on the time required to have the same kind of enjoyment that he probably did at the end of it, in a very, very narrow window.
Well, and if you really look at his videos, and I don't mean to diss him at all, but I think once I say this, most people appreciate what I'm saying. If he didn't have the safety of being able to go home at the end of it for the first few weeks anyways, then I'm pretty sure he would have been cold, wet, and very hungry before he managed to build his first good shelter. Because he eventually built shelters with in-floor heating, you name it, right?
Yeah.
And this was because he had the time to do it, and he had these kind of backup systems to work with. But it's pretty cool. And there's a whole genre that followed off of him. There's a couple of guys that I believe are based out of Asia. I want to say Cambodia. And they go in, and the clay that they must live in is unreal, because they build amazing huts with, like, swimming pools in them and everything. But they based them off the same idea, very quiet and...
Yeah, and it's a genre in its own. It's super relaxing. I used to love going to bed watching this stuff, you know what I mean? Because it was just so awesome. But anyway, that's kind of something else. But gear knowledge, learning the knowledge, and using the gear is the whole reason I go out. Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, coming full circle again there. The gear and knowledge, the gear makes up for the shortcomings of the knowledge. But at the same time, you need the knowledge to be able to support the gear. And once again, lost my train of thought. I had something important to say there, too, which is the worst part, and I can't remember what it is to begin.
So, what I think you're getting at it is you need the knowledge to use the gear to its best ability, and you also need the knowledge to know what the best gear is. And without that, even with that right knowledge, if we lost the gear, we can compensate. And that's the beauty of it, is with the knowledge, the proper knowledge, if we did lose a piece of gear, we know we're not completely high and dry. We can do without it. We can. And I think learning that skill in life in general would help most people, because I don't know how many people, once they lose one key item, will completely fall apart in a project or an experience or anything in life. Like, you become so focused on the one thing you don't have that you forget about everything you do have.
And a prime example of this, and I'm not trying to cut you off, Ben, but to interject into that point, is Watch Alone, another TV series. We try not to comment on these guys because we don't know anything about them. Like, the number one thing I say is I wasn't there, so I don't like to comment. But if you're relying on 10 items and lose one, you see how detrimental that becomes very quickly.
Yeah. Not many people, after having lost a key piece of gear, last for many more episodes.
Exactly.
You know,
and that translates to real life. If you go out in the woods, you're 30 kilometers back, and you're going to have a great weekend, and you lose this piece of gear that you were wholeheartedly depending on, how long is it before you start packing up and you're just like, oh, this isn't fun anymore? If you're good with it, Ben, I'd like to draw attention to a couple comments just because they're starting to stack up here. And Real Big Monkey, Dave had one there, and it was just a comment. You need to, knowledge to know how much gear you'll need to face an upcoming temperature, environment, or climate. Knowledge keeps one from dying in the wilderness. And that's just a good key point.
Yeah.
And I guess the second one, there is some other comments there. And anybody that's listening to this out in the podcast, I do invite you to come back, jump on our YouTube channel and look at the comments. Unfortunately, we don't get a chance to bring light to all of them. And there is a lot of good comments there. I try to pick out a few key highlights. This one I want to come back to because I don't know how long they're going to stay with us in case they got to go off or not. But Patrick Morrissey, thinking about tarping instead of tenting, but definitely need the gear to learn. Or definitely need, the gear to learn. So, oh, hey, he just happened to pop up. So at least I know he's still with us. So to touch on that a little bit, that's a prime example of start out basic and learn what you want to do after that. Poor Joe. Steve knew who we were talking about. Anyway, but yeah, so if you're thinking about tarping instead of tenting, you can start out with some basic tarps, and I don't know where your location is there, Patrick, but you can even start some of this in your backyard. Go grab a dollar store or whatever tarp there. You don't necessarily have to take it into the woods, but it's a square tarp. You can start learning how to do some tarp lays. Start learning how to do some shelter, you know, setup, stuff like that. Figure out what type of shelter you think you're going to like in the woods with that tarp, and then you can kind of go from there. That way you're not just throwing money at tarps. Tarps are a very broad thing that has a lot of different types and sizes and materials and shapes and tie-outs. And I mean, it's a lot of fun, too. Don't get me wrong. Would you agree, Ben?
Oh, I love my tarps. And the first time I bought what would you call a good tarp, the sticker price nearly blew me over, because I've spent almost as much on some tarps. In fact, I've spent more on some tarps than I did on tents. So I would like to preface this with, buying a tarp isn't necessarily a savings thing for financing, but what it gives you is the ability to set up so many more designs based on your environment. So a tent is good for, is a bit of a jack of all trades, where a tarp is a specialist. And that's the way I want to present this. So a tent kind of has to get set up pretty well the exact same way every time. And a good tent you can set up in about 90% of situations. A good tarp, you should be able to find some usable situation in almost 100% of situations using a good tarp. It's because it has that additional flexibility. But you do have to think outside of the box with a tent, with a tarp, where a tent, you don't have to. So going with the tarp, you're going to increase your skill level. you're going to increase your abilities. Are you going to be more comfortable? I'm going to say no, not necessarily, because your tent's coming with, you know, a screen, a few extra little niceties, a waterproof bottom, like a bathtub, basically, in it. Tarps, you don't have all these things, so you have to up your skill level. But can you end up just as comfortable once you build that skill level? Yes, I think so. But it is a great thing to do, and it's a great thing to learn. Still got it
there. Just give me one sec, Ben. I might have it right here.
Well, what? New tarp? So, yeah, when you do go buy a tarp, Hickey said, great idea, though, is to go down to your local hardware store and pick up a handful of poly tarps. Dirt cheap, lots of grommets on them. You can buy the little grommet kits if you want to add a few. And really play with different designs, because as you do this, you're really going to see how many types you really tend to use, what types you really enjoy, and you can better choose the right tarp for you. I'm kind of partial to the 10 by 13 for a size myself. But now, since he doesn't know what I said, what would you say, Robert, is an ideal size for a tarp?
Oh, okay. I think the ideal size for a tarp, you have to weigh out what you're going to be doing with that tarp. Is it just going to be you? Is it going to be you and somebody else? Is it going to be you and a ton of gear? Are you going to be trying to hammock with it? Are you going to be sleeping on the ground? I think there's more that goes into that question than just saying, oh, a 10 by 10 tarp is going to be your ideal size. 10 by 10, like if I had to pick a size, is a good starting point. After that, you have to kind of go down the road of what are you doing with this tarp. I mean, if you're just going to go sleep under a tarp, pick however tall you are, add a few inches on either end, and off you go. You know what I mean? But if you're going to, you know, you need that a little wider, you're going to have heavy winds, so you want to go over to the ground. Like, you got to take all this into account, what you want to do with it. But I think I started with a 10 by 10 tarp. I think after that, I upgraded to a 12 by 12 tarp because it just gave me a few more options and a little bit more room. Because I like doing kind of like a half lean-to setup. But then I kind of want that front porch thing where you can kind of get out of the rain a little too. But that's just a nicety for myself.
So mine was 10 by 13.
Hmm.
I have two or three that are in that ballpark. You know, they could be off by a few inches. In fact, I'm sure they are. But I have my Silnylon mech guide tarp, which I do like, although I will have complained about it in the past and I complained about it in the future. And I also have my one Tigris ones that I like. And they're, I can't remember the name that was on that particular series at the time.
That's what I went to dig up.
Yes. Now, is that the Anchorage one?
This is the Anchorage one. And this is what I was going to recommend to Patrick, where he's just getting into, and once again, just a recommendation.
That was an end of line, though, eh?
Yeah, but if you can dig one of these up, used or something like that, it's a good way to start, because this is it's not a flat tarp. It is a semi-pre-constructed tarp, if that makes any kind of sense. This was made to be pitched in a method they pre-planned out for you, but then you can still do some other stuff with it. So I like that one because it's a good bridge. It gives you an idea of how to set up right out of the bag, but then you can kind of expand on it.
I kind of want, now that you've pulled that out, and I have one, I've only used it two or three times, I kind of want to do a night with that.
I'm debating it very soon. That's why it was so close.
that one, I believe, it may even have zippers.
I think it does. I'm trying to remember now because I tested a couple tarps there, but I'm pretty sure that one literally sets... like. The reason I liked that one, and kind of going off topic here, is because I'm convinced I could change it into a hammock tarp so easy. What I mean? So, and that's another question you have to ask yourself, Pat, if you're going to be doing tarps, is are you going to be sleeping on the ground or are you going to be sleeping in a hammock? Or some other system, you know what I mean? Like a pop-up cot or a raised bed or whatever you want to do.
So the thing I do like with the bigger tarp, though, is you can take some of the excess length if you're doing a smaller shelter and create a floor.
Yes.
Now, there's a whole debate on the goodness of that, and it really depends for me on the quality of the ground. If it's rough, rugged, sharpish ground, I'm not putting my tarp to the ground because I don't want to tear it up and destroy it. But if I got nice soft ground and I just want something to keep the moisture off of me, I will often go with that.
And that's a prime point too. Think about ground tarp. If your main tarp is not going to double as your ground tarp. Can't do hammocks, I sleep on my stomach. So yeah, this would actually probably be a great tarp for you to start out with if you can happen to dig one up secondhand somewhere, because they weren't overly expensive.
We picked ours up on a sale, I think. Give Jeremy a shout out where we can, right? Jeremy sent it to me, and I think I sent it to a few people, or you found it on your own. I don't remember how you got yours.
But I think you sent it to me, and I picked one up because there's only two.
Yeah, and they were dirt cheap. Like, we paid like $20.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was like $30, $35 that shipped.
Yeah, we didn't pay much for them. And I set one up in the backyard. I think there's a video floating around somewhere. I don't know if it ever got posted. But we figured it was big enough that two of us could sleep in it with a small stove.
Yeah, and that was kind of one of the ideas we had with this that got backburnered due to COVID. But anyway, that's just kind of a little ramble on tarps there. And tying it in once again is, as your knowledge increases, you'll figure out what you want for a tarp. Because not only is there square and rectangle tarps, there's like hexagonal tarps, which is what I take when I go hammock camping, because I like that style of tarp. Not that any one is any better, don't get me wrong, that's just my preference. And you'll learn the value of tie-outs, or lack thereof, if you don't like the tie-outs. Like, something I've learned from my hexagonal tarp is, I would like to put about 5 more tie-outs on it. 6 more tie-outs. 10 more tie-outs. As many tie-outs as I could possibly jam on this thing, because more tie-outs is more options.
Oh, I agree 100%. Pull-outs, which are tie-outs that are in the center, or on the inside, are awesome, too, for certain setups. I have a diamond-shaped tarp.
A diamond-shaped tarp?
Yes. So it's meant to be set up point to point and not corner to, you know what I mean? And it's a hammock tarp. It's designed for a hammock. It came with a hammock. And it has its own unique little idiosyncrasies with it. I mean, just the 4 tie-out points and the stuff. But it's a much smaller tarp, and a lot of people look at it and say it's not big enough, but believe it or not, when set up properly over my hammock, although it's only maybe a foot or two longer than my hammock and only a few feet wider, and people don't believe it, but you can set up in some pretty heavy winds and heavy rain and stay dry.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think I might have a tarp like that too. I can't remember 100%, but...
But that's where experience and knowledge allows you to use a smaller, lighter piece of device, like a tarp, in a more effective manner. So where somebody without maybe the experience and knowledge may decide to get a huge tarp that weighs more to make sure they have 100% coverage, somebody with the right knowledge and knowing how to set it up right, they're going to be just as dry and secure, and they don't necessarily have to drag around as much stuff.
Just give me one second there.
But that doesn't mean the big tarp doesn't have its point or use and doesn't actually add some advantages. It just has some disadvantages in its size and its weight.
And something that was mentioned there in the comments was bivy bags. And Chris said they're very underrated in Eastern Canada. That's a good point, too. I do have a bivy bag. And they're good to use as with tarps as well, is what Kier was saying there. But
I've never really used a bivy bag.
You were in the military. How did you not use a bivy bag?
They didn't get... We had a... How to put this? What was issued to us was more of a... It was called a ground tarp, I believe, or half tarp. Half tarp is what it was called. And they zipped it together. So if you and your fire team buddy zipped it together, it made a small tent. And if 4 or 5 people zipped it together, you actually made a larger tent. And if you use it just yourself, it would be a covering, and it wouldn't be that far off from a bivy bag, but it's not truly a bag. It doesn't really go under you. It doesn't give you that full security. So no, it wasn't part of my issued kit, a true bivy bag. I was issued a full three-piece tent system. I was issued the self-inflating mattress and a Black Betty. So they were both, one was being ended. The Black Betty is an air mattress that used to have a big bag on it. You open it up, close it, roll it in. And then they came out with the thin green ones. Now the Black Betty, because it was a big black air mattress, it was 4 to 5 inches thick when it was blown up, where your green one was like an inch and a half, maybe 2 inches at best. So that 4 to 5 inch one was much more comfortable. Just saying.
Chris said, did the Canadian military get bivy bags? I know certain places did. Followers I used to hang out with in high school, they joined the militia right around the tail end of high school, and they did receive bivy bags. But it wasn't long afterwards it was replaced by, I think, something very similar to what you're talking about there, Ben.
Yeah, so I joined in 97, and I don't remember getting them.
This would have been 2001, 2002.
So quite a bit after me.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, that's actually kind of surprising. They joined here in the Pictou County one. That's just, anyway, that's kind of where I got one of my bivy bags without spilling the beans too much on somebody.
Other things, though, that I did get to use was the Ranger blanket, which is an awesome piece of gear. But I never actually owned one until I bought one to replace the one they said I lost. And then they took it. So, but I seen them used quite a bit. It was a point of contention for me in that experience. But this is a spot, like a great place to learn knowledge is actually places like the military, because they spend millions of dollars figuring out what the ideal gear kit was for a single soldier. And that's very transferable to a bushcrafter or a hiker or a camper or anyone else who's into the outdoors, because a lot of the stuff crosses. I mean, we don't have to pay so much attention to the self-dispense aspect of it all. But their goal was to get the soldier's gear light enough and efficient enough that he could travel greater distances and be efficient. So this does work. You know, there's a reason they had down sleeping bags. There's a reason they had, you know, rugged gear, though. Like, their gear was designed to survive. We can get away in a civilian aspect with lighter weight, thinner gear, because we can take our time and be more careful with it. They didn't, you know, gear was tossed into trucks. Mm-hmm. Gear was dragged down hills. They did what they had to do with it to survive. So, you know, take that same knowledge, add it with today's technology, and decide to go with some smaller, lighter gear. You can increase those same dividends for potentially even less money if you really know what you're doing.
Yeah, there's a point there too. And if you want to go to the extreme end of that, my opinion, you'd know more, Ben, because you researched more than me. Those ultralight campers, they kind of have that down to almost to a science as to the bare minimum of weight and stuff. But now you're getting into very high price tags. And sometimes you need a little bit of knowledge set to go up for this too, because once again, something to think about, at a price point somewhere where it crosses, you need additional knowledge to use that gear.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's try to put this in something that I think most people are going to understand and be comfortable talking about. Sleeping bags. Me and you have talked about sleeping bags. We have the down sleeping bag versus the synthetic sleeping bag. You know, it's generally accepted that down sleeping bags are lighter weight and more efficient than synthetic sleeping bags. But down sleeping bag is A, more expensive, and B, if you don't treat it right, it's not going to do you well. Your synthetic sleeping bag is actually going to take more abuse. It's cheaper to buy, and the trade-offs aren't as great as you might think when you start looking into the true price of it. Because you had a synthetic sleeping bag, I had a down sleeping bag. We did very similar things with it. When we did the measurements and all that, the advantages I was gaining was a few ounces here or there in weight, but there's greater care. Like, when I put my sleeping bag up, it's in a giant, big, loose bag, so it doesn't get compressed. I don't want to damage the down. You're, I'm sure, much less concerned about compressing your synthetic bag.
Wouldn't go that far. It's hanging from the ceiling over here by my desk. It's not even in a bag.
mine's laying in a giant laundry bag hanging from the ceiling. And the same thing, though. Like, it's left fluffy. If a down gets wet, even if it's this dry tech technologies and stuff you can find in it, it loses its thermal efficiency rather quickly, where your synthetic sleeping bag actually can get a little damp and not lose as much.
Yeah, and that was one of the big things that drew me to the synthetic bag was dries out easier. As you said, a little bit more durable in some aspects, but and maybe I was wrong in this, I thought one of the big trade-offs I had was the loft aspect. Down sleeping bags, you tend to be able to re-loft easier, as where synthetic will tend to pack down and eventually get to the point where it loses loft. That's why I have mine hung up over here by the...
Yeah, there is a little bit there. So down, you shouldn't leave compressed because it will take longer to puff up. So here's the thing. You can gain back the loft with your down, and down will generally outlast, if taken care, synthetic. Eventually your synthetic will clump and have issues. But, you know, again, some trade-offs there for sure. Down does definitely needs to be dried, and if it does start to clump up, you can refluff it. The best way I found is a handful of tennis balls in the dryer at a low heat, just let it go around and bounce, and it'll eventually unclump and stuff. Once your down sleep or your synthetic sleeping bags really get clumpy, I've never been able to get them unclumpy. Like, I've tried a few things. I've thrown a few out there. But when I think about it, you know, a $30 sleeping bag that I had in the early 90s, late 80s, I might as well just go out and buy a $60 one today. It's probably basically the same sleeping bag, rather than spend a whole bunch of hours trying to save it, right?
So where are we coming up here? We're coming up on our 1 hour. We kind of got derailed on sleeping bags there a little, but it's still kind of tied in. We talked, you know what I mean? So it wasn't one of our massive derails like we sometimes get to. I do apologize for my messenger going off there. Somebody was talking to me, and I was trying to be polite about it. And it wasn't you, Chris. You only sent me one message. It was actually somebody else decided to send me a little story as they were going along, and I literally just told them, like, look, I'm on a podcast. But anyway, so final thoughts, Ben. Let's try and at least get our final thoughts out before we diverge too far down another tangent.
I think the final thought that everyone needs to kind of think about is you can't gain that knowledge / experience, because I want to put it that way, without playing with the difference of equipments and stuff. So that they are tied hand in hand, but over time, I think the equipment you choose will be more precisely chosen, and you're choosing it for the best experience for you. And that is going to change from person to person and experience to experience. But your equipment is definitely not going to be the same after 5-10 years experiences when you started. You're going to change your equipment. You're going to buy some gear that's more expensive. And other gear, believe it or not, you're going to say the cheaper gear is just as good. And the example I will throw out there, just to sort of give that, why spend a ton of money on something where you can get something for less? And we've talked about it before, the Mora knife. You can buy a cheap Mora knife. It's going to work just as fine as some $500 knives. So take your time. Through knowledge and experience, you're going to decide. Some things are worth spending a whole bunch of money on. Other things are worth aren't worth it. Some things, you know, you can save time and money. And some gear simply isn't worth taking because you're not going to use it. As much as you think it'd be great, I'm sure we have hundreds of examples between us of gear that we've bought, thought would be awesome, and has rarely, if ever, left our camping area. You know what I mean?
Yep. Sad to say, I've spent some big money on things that I thought were going to be the cat's meow, and now they're just fancy ornaments. But, and I think that's kind of the point that I'd make as well, agreeing with Ben. you'll know where to spend your money as you acquire the knowledge. Gear is great. And if there was unlimited funds, I know we would use we would own a lot more gear. Not necessarily the gear that we're going to take with us every single time, but I can guarantee you I'd have a plethora of stuff I would want to try and... Sorry, just comment caught me there. I'll come back to that. You'll know where you want to sink your money. You'll figure out that maybe the $100 sleeping bag you bought does everything you want, or you'll find that, okay, maybe you want to invest a little more money into a different bag, or maybe you want to go with down versus synthetic, like we talked about. You'll know if that diamond tarp, like Ben talked about, is the bee's knees to you, or you want to go with a rectangular tarp, or if you want to go with a tent versus a tarp. Like, the knowledge is going to direct you as to where you're going to spend the money on the gear. But that's not to say that the gear won't direct you on your knowledge either. Sometimes, if you are lucky enough to maybe get some hand-me-downs and stuff like that, because that's a great way to acquire some decent gear at a low cost, find a buddy that has good gear that's willing to maybe part with some of it a little cheaper and get their opinions on it. Like, Ben steered me away from some things versus I was going to waste money on other things. You know what I mean? And, I think that's kind of everything. It's just gear doesn't make the trip. It makes the trip better. And you need to have the knowledge to back it up. So don't waste a ton of money on the gear until you have enough knowledge to know what you want out of your gear.
Yeah. Because in the end, that balance of the right gear and the right knowledge makes the biggest difference, I think.
No, and I agree with you. I'm just trying to catch up on some comments here because we have some good ones coming up here. Showed up right at the end. Okay, so Roundabout showed up at the end, which is all good, man. We got you. So his philosophy is, as a beginner, if you're going to invest in rugged gear that'll last long instead of gear that's feature sets outweigh your skill level, which is actually a really good point. And like Ben said, as you go along, you'll probably be changing your gear anyway. So if you start off with high expensive gear and find out you don't like it, that's a lot of money just to, you know, throw down the drain.
Yeah. That being said, I mean, what's the other expression you hear a lot of people say? You know, buy good gear and cry once. Buy crap gear and you end up crying twice because you have to, you know, when it breaks or when it fails, you have to replace it. So now you're buying something multiple times. So that's a hard debate. I go through that myself a lot. Mm. There is gear out there that I really want, expensive gear. And I'd struggle to spend the money on it. I know once I do, I'd be very happy with it. If I was to throw an example of that out, a down underquilt is something I really want. A down underquilt is something I do not have.
No.
Why do I want it? Because I've seen guys go into woods with a down underquilt, and their pack is half the size as mine because my synthetic underquilt is the same size as a decent sleeping bag. And so I'm essentially carrying two sleeping bags. And what's the biggest bane of camping, in my opinion? Bulk.
Hmm. And it's not weight, it's bulk. Because there is a difference. No, and I agree with you. When we went into the waterfall trip, I borrowed a underquilt from Ben. And literally, I had basically two sleeping bags strapped to the bottom of my backpack, and I think my sleeping bag was smaller because I only brought my spring bag, which was rated to like 5 degrees, which, as we said multiple times, was a terrible idea for where we were going. But
yeah, but even that being said, like I have, yeah, I'll show you some.
So just while Ben's grabbing that, Kier said, "Modern life is the epitome of gear over knowledge. When we go outdoors, we decide where to go on the spectrum from modern to primitive we want to experience."
I have this. This is it's called a summer sleeping bag. I think it's rated to 10 degrees Celsius. And I've used it as a liner for years. Thing is, this is a quarter size of my sleeping bag.
Hmm.
Like, so it's a fleece sleeping bag is all it really is. you can buy decent liners that are rated for a similar temperature that are the size of a softball. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
That's a volleyball.
If anybody's honestly wondering if a bag liner's worth it, totally worth it. That's a whole other thing. You know, if people are interested in sleeping bags, because Ben and I have talked about this quite a lot, and we've had discussions with each other, we could almost do a show just on sleeping bags and the different parts of sleeping bags. If anybody's interested in such a thing, you guys let us know. We're always open to know what you guys want to hear us basically get on here and blab about. Because it gives us something to do. We research these things fairly often. Is it safe to say, Ben, that at least a couple times a week you're either researching or looking at gear?
Yes. Yes, that is a safe assumption.
And notice I said that with not the slightest bit of sarcasm attached to it.
Much to the anger of my wife, I will get some topic stuck in my head and I go down the rabbit hole. And it can take days sometimes, if not weeks, for me to come out of that hole. And I don't know where I'm going to end up when you're in there. But, yeah, sleeping bags are an awesome thing. And honestly, like we've talked about this before, where should you spend your money? And we've often said sleeping bag is a spot where I think like spending some money is worth it. There's a ton of gear out there where you can get good gear for little to no money, if you know what you're doing. There are other spots where you really should spend a few dollars. Mm-hmm. And a decent sleeping bag is one that I think we've routinely recommended.
Well, we've said many a times, if you don't get a good night's sleep, your trip's ruined.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just to say them out loud, some ideas that have come from the comments fairly quickly about what we should talk about in the coming weeks, Ben, is fishing gear. And I can think of a couple people that might be willing to be guests to come on to that. Chris and Gary. And wood stoves. Patrick mentioned wood stoves there, and I think we briefly talked about them way back at the start of our podcasting career. But now that we've got into this a little bit, I know you have the odd one there, Ben, and we might have built one. Oh, you still got that over there?
It's just over there, yeah. So we ran a couple times.
Yeah, well, when did we finish that? We finished that last fall.
Yeah.
And we burnt it in then.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Wood stoves might be an interesting topic, too. Might be worth a gear of the month. We could combine a gear of the month with some general wood stove talk.
Wood stoves are awesome. Again, I know a few people who have bought ones. And I'm not going to diss about wood stove because honestly, more often than not, when I go on trips, somebody brings one and I provide the tent or whatever because, you know, that somebody's here. It's a little better than my homemade one. That being said, there are times like a bigger one might be useful or whatever, but a small tent, a small stove works out great.
Holy moly, there's somebody in the comments I haven't seen in a long time. Guess who just crawled into the comments section?
Lone Wolf.
Lone Wolf 902.
He's still alive.
He's still with us. What's up, Jeremy? But yeah, wood stoves might be a good chat there. And
Now that he's here, if you really want to know about wood stoves.
I was just about to say, there's a man there that knows a thing or two or has tried the odd wood stove.
Yeah, he's got us beat.
Yeah, no, I think hands down, he probably has us outclassed on the wood stove knack there. But welcome to the show, Jeremy. We're just finishing up the tail end of it here. You missed a good one. Next week, potentially, we may be talking about wood stoves if you're interested in maybe popping in and having a 2-cent input on that one. Because, as we just said, we know you have at least one, maybe two wood stoves there and would have an opinion on it. And if anybody's wondering why we're saying this to Jeremy must have literally a basement full of wood stoves at this point from all the ones he's tested and stuff in the past. So he would definitely have some good insight on at least styles, varieties, and things like that to think of. I'm literally in my tent 20 feet away from a waterfall. So he's living the good life like normal.
I can't even camp with anyone anymore. Like, everyone I like to camp with is physically outside of my area right now.
Oh, doesn't that suck?
I know.
I still got your book, by the way. It's literally still sitting right here on my computer. So I haven't done anything weird to it yet, but give me time. You know what works like as a good bookmark? Slice of bologna. I'll stick that right there for you.
Don't you dare.
But all right, everybody, I think we are slowly derailing this train pretty hard. So it's probably that time of the night we should probably pack it in. You think so, Ben?
Sure.
All right.
In the interest of saving my book, yes.
All right, everybody, have a good night. Get out there, get dirty. Send us some stories.